Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Bauer, Bruno Barron, Kristen McQuarrie, and Michael Loftus. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, each and every Sunday night, audio and video portion of the broadcast, beyondthebeltway.com, also the place to go for past broadcasts. Well, there are just 16 days to go before Election Day. And again, we've got lots to talk about. It was a very busy week. And we're going to begin with the latest poll. This is the poll that came out today from ABC News. And it had Hillary Clinton in the lead at 50%. And in second place, we had Donald Trump. And he is at 38%. And Gary Johnson at 5%. And Jill Stein at 2%. So let me ask you, Michael, you are our card-carrying Trumpster tonight. I know you're not going to say it's over.
Certainly
but,
not.
But is at least the fat lady approaching the microphone?
Trump's losing by most polls. But the striking thing to me is we've got a clump of polls that have him down in two digits. And we got a clump of polls. We got Reuters, Investors Business Daily, and LA Times that have him within one. Now, if it were just one, the LA Times has been a bit of an outlier, but it's striking to me that we've got these three polls that show him a lot closer. What do you make of that? I don't know. I also know that there are people who are making an effort still in Pennsylvania who tell me that, you know, they aren't even giving up on Pennsylvania, where I think he was down five. So, and the last thing I'll say is, you know, we're all old enough to have lived through three blowout elections in our lifetime, at least 80, 84, 72, and 64. And 2 weeks before the election, it was the front runner was over the horizon, and that's not what we're seeing.
I want to ask one follow-up to Kristen McQuarrie. Kristen McQuarrie joins us. She's with the Chicago Tribune, member of the editorial board. Of course, the Tribune owns the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times poll has always been the outlier for the last couple of months in this race. What can you tell us about the way that your colleagues at the Times are polling people, and are they closer to the truth than maybe some of the other more well-known polls?
I don't know that I am willing to say that they're closer to the truth or not. I think polls generally, broadly speaking, leading up to the election, as we saw 4 years ago, track pretty closely with how candidates are doing. And so this whole idea that Trump has been trotting out lately that the election is rigged and that he is, you know, if he loses, it's because the election is rigged. The polls track pretty closely with how candidates end up doing. Are the polls rigged or has he genuinely lost support? I think he has genuinely lost support, and he is now trying to dig himself out of that.
Bruno Barron also joins us. You are a libertarian here for Gary Johnson.
Right.
Is this race over?
I don't think so. I mean, it looks pretty bad, and I've said for the longest time. I mean, I'm normally a Republican. I was for Walker, and then, you know, I was for Rubio, and, you know, who knows? I was for anybody but Trump, and I'm still pretty much in that position as a conservative. However, if you look at, I will concede, I never thought Trump would have come as close as he did in the polls. And I also noticed that every time some big bad thing happens, you know, he makes some mistake or some gaffe or does something stupid, he drops dramatically, and then Hillary Clinton just can't shake him. Now, if this 12-point poll...
50%, that's...
If that's accurate, and it may be an outlier, I haven't seen other polls saying the same thing, but it's clear that if you take the basket of polls like Real Clear Politics does quite often, and look at what they all show. They all show that, but Hillary's climb since the Trump comments and the debate performances has stopped, and now it's going the other direction again.
Michael,
so who
Bauer,
knows what's going to happen?
You're a Democrat and a Clinton supporter. What's your take?
You know,
is it over?
The major media and major polling firms are putting out polls based on popular vote because it's the entertaining thing to do. It gets headlines. You know, someone's ahead, someone's behind by X percent. But we all know, frankly, this is an election that's based on the Electoral College. And the key is getting 270 electoral votes, which makes it a 50-state election. And the path for Donald Trump to 270 is getting worse and worse by every week. it is an extremely, extremely difficult path. Now, I will not suggest that the race is over, but I would suggest at this point, and with only 16 days to go, and a limited number of undecided voters left, the path for Trump to try to get to 270 is a very steep hill to climb.
All right, let's go back to, by the way, I don't think anybody, I don't even think you disagree with that.
I think we all agree pretty much.
So where do you think things are perhaps still up in there? You mentioned Pennsylvania. Just an anecdotal point. A regular listener to this show sent me an email a couple of days ago. He happened to be driving through the state of Pennsylvania last week, coming back to Chicago, and he said, going, you know, he was taking the back roads, not the highways, and he said virtually every 100 yards there was a Trump sign. It was nonstop. There wasn't a sign for anybody, but it was for hundreds of miles throughout the state of Pennsylvania.
No, this is an election where the anecdotes may tell us something. We won't know till afterwards. I think the fact that there's this divergence in the polls, I don't really know what to make of it. I don't have a good gut. I'm voting for him because I really want to stop Hillary Clinton from being president. I think a lot of people feel that way, but I don't know how it's going to go.
The idea that the election is rigged, which is what he said, which follows up on what Bernie Sanders said throughout the entire Democratic primary, that the system was rigged. Is the system rigged or is the election rigged?
I'm not sure exactly what he means, and if I knew what he meant and I read his mind, I could help us all a lot better. I think he's talking about at least two things.
When
he's talking
I'd be about, able to help him help.
Oh, well, right. He talks, and then we got to figure out what it means. He may be talking about the news media coverage, which he thinks is unfair. I think there's a case to be made for that. I think that we have an example of in the debate where Hillary was given questions that, you know, and she got to prep
that
better. That was unfair. And then there's the the whole business of this O'Keefe video where we had these Democrat operatives talking about we're going to bus people across state lines to vote. We've been doing it for 50 years. Now, this is the kind of anecdote I hear from people who do election integrity with the Republican National Lawyers. But it's very difficult to pin this stuff down. Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Kristen, what's your take on the use of rigged elections or a rigged system? Does he have something there? Or you sort of suggested an answer to question number one that maybe it may be hurting him.
I think he does not have a claim that, by and large, elections are rigged in the sense that there are dead people voting, that people are stuffing ballot boxes, that nationally there is some sort of corruption that is going to tilt the election. What I think he taps into by using the word rigged is how many people feel that their vote doesn't count. And speaking from a perspective of someone from Illinois and Chicago, I understand that because we have a Democratic Party in the state where we are not allowed to vote on redistricting reform or term limits. They block things from even getting on the ballot when you have widespread support and citizen initiative to get it done, and you have just a small number of people really making policy decisions in this state. Is that not a rigged system in Illinois? I think it is. And so I think he does tap into that sentiment.
I want to follow up with everyone on that. And also, after the debate last week, and most people suggested that Donald Trump did a pretty good job, it was the answer to the question about rigged elections or the failure to say that he would accept the results on Election Day. That became the story, not just of one reporter, of virtually every reporter, certainly a Beltway reporter. And again, that sort of dominated the news for the next 72 hours. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Do you believe the election is going to be rigged? Back shortly from Chicago.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Michael Bauer, rigged election, rigged system.
So let's talk about
which do you buy into?
Let's talk about what Donald Trump has talked about as a presidential candidate. He first of all talks about a rigged system and rigged polls. So let me deal with rigged polls first. All right. You know, we had, in addition to years of Democrats as president, we've had years where Republicans have been president. Ronald Reagan was president for 8 years. George H.W. Bush was president for 4 years. George W. Bush was president for 8 years. They were reporting, they were appointing Republican U.S. attorneys across the country. How many people were prosecuted in all those years for voter fraud by Republicans?
Not many.
Practically no one.
Yeah.
All right. So I think this talk about rigged elections is just an invalid comment.
What about the activities? And this is what he doesn't, you know, point out very articulately. But what about the intimidation of Black Panther Party members in Philadelphia 4 years ago? I mean, that was widespread. It was well documented. And I think that's...
And not prosecuted. They decided we don't want to prosecute this. There have been prosecutions. There were some voter fraud issues that were prosecuted a few years ago downstate, I think, in East St. Louis and that area. Here's the thing: when you prosecute voter fraud, do you go after the one or two? Do you go after the individuals who voted fraudulently? Do you go after the people who make it happen? I mean, if you look at the stories that have come out, you've got illegal immigrants who are registered automatically through motor voter in places like Virginia. They've shown tens of thousands of them registered, and a few thousand of them voted. Who knows how they voted? But I think we can guess. We're pretty sure that the two elections of the gubernatorial races in Washington State a few years ago, and I'm forgetting the names of the candidates, there was vote fraud involved there, where all these people were registered at the right within the block of the main voting registration, and then we have Norm Coleman and Al Franken, which was clearly an example of
Minnesota.
In Minnesota of the likelihood. Not the proof, but the likelihood. And that was litigated, and the judge as well. So the hardest part about prosecuting this stuff is that everybody's like, oh, you know, nobody really wants to overturn an election that might have been honest. It's like, and what bothers me here is that the Republicans, the conservatives, especially the angriest, Trumpiest ones, swear voter fraud is taking place, and they think everything is rigged. And I tend to think that those Republicans overstate voter fraud. What annoys me more than anything is the Democrats look at a few articles about how IDs don't really matter that much, and the Pew says, and this Annenberg says, and this, and then they say, oh, it's not a problem, and it never really happened. I think it has swung House races, it has swung Senate races, and in a presidential election, if there's enough of it in a swing state, it can swing election.
But does anybody believe that at this point that that's going to be the deciding factor?
Impossible to say.
Likely?
You have to be very close in an importance. Say, for example, that the things you hear about Cleveland, Ohio, where you have precincts that come in 100% for the Democrat, that it's a statistical impossibility, okay? That if Ohio were very close, it could matter, but we don't know.
Wait, why is that a statistical impossibility? You have some black wards that I guarantee you will vote 100% for Hillary Clinton this year.
There are always a small number of mistaken ballots. That's why, supposedly, so I have read, a statistical impossibility with a big enough sample to not have at least a couple that aren't on the guy you want. That's
well, there may be ballots that are discarded, but
by whom?
Yeah, somebody votes.
We went through this in Florida. You know, we went through this in Florida in 2000 with various questions over ballots and how they're cast and things like that.
You
and ballots
Florida.
Being discarded.
Florida is a very helpful thing to think about. In 2000, Trump has been asked to agree in advance to not dispute what happens during the election. Al Gore would have been a fool to do that. He didn't know it, but he didn't. Nobody in their right mind enters a transaction with someone they don't entirely trust and says, no matter how this turns out, I promise not to object to how it turns out.
I agree with that, but let me ask Kristen a question. Why is it that the news media became so obsessed with that answer?
Because
using the logic that Mike just stated, that seems to be a logical, common sense thing that you wouldn't do in advance.
Because the news media, the mainstream news media, tends to be a body of groupthink. And so they have one question, which I agree with Mike. I think it was a silly question to begin with. Nobody's asking Hillary Clinton whether she's going to accept the results of the election.
Right.
So they ask him this question. He answers in a way that is very Donald Trump-like. Instead of thinking it through, he answers in a way that you have people on CNN and all these other places questioning, even Joe Biden, that Donald Trump is somehow questioning the basis of our democracy. It's absolutely silly because you know what? Sometimes elections, like I was alluding to earlier in certain states, you do have a feeling of it being rigged, but it's not rigged in a widespread way that Donald Trump has sort of alluded to. It's rigged in the sense that it's so hard for people to get on the ballot who are independents. They up the signature requirements in all these states. It's so hard to stay on the ballot. They kick you off the ballot for not stapling your paperwork correctly. So in all of those ways, yeah, the system is rigged to protect incumbents of both parties.
But also,
are you the Republican guest here today?
It seems to me that part of the phoniness here is these crocodile tears about nobody remembers what happened in 2000. There's a generation of Democrats that don't think that George Bush was a legitimate president of the United States.
But you see, Bruce, I think, first of all, the reason they're making such a big deal out of that question is it fits the media's narrative about Trump, which is that he's a closet fascist who wants to end the – I mean, that's just – they've been saying –
put his opponent in jail.
And quite frankly, you know, I don't even know – like I said, I think Trump has done so many inartful things that it's hard to find the one or two or three times that you have to defend him. But the fact of the matter is that he has gotten some of these things right. You don't say, I'm going to accept anything. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the stories are going to come out. You don't know what people are going to do.
We get two lawyers at this table. We would always tell our clients, you have a full reservation of rights. You don't say, I'm going to just concede in advance.
Okay, here you have a presidential candidate who says, when I'm elected, I'm going to appoint a special prosecutor, and I'm going to throw my opponent in jail. He's already decided the findings of the special prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. He said he was going for the special prosecutor to investigate her, and then later on he said, you should be in jail. I think that was the way he didn't say there wasn't going to be an investigation.
He's judging the investigation, though. He's judging the investigation.
Well, that's true.
What kind of nonsense is this? This is from a. Well, you're right. It's from a very inartful candidate.
Inartful. That's a nice way of saying it.
Who is a first-time candidate, and he's done a masterful job of raising some important issues. I will concede, but he is not very articulate in what to do.
Sure. The next day, he gave a speech and he explained perfectly clearly that he wasn't talking about if I lose, I'm going to, you know, take over the country and declare a dictatorship. He's said, look, if there's questions, if things don't look right, of course I'm going to question it. It's the exact kind of thing we would expect him to say. I think you also made a really important point, Michael. It's like, this guy's a novice candidate. It's mind-blowing. This is a guy, as good as he's been at the other things he does, who just walked in, and he's within a few points of being president 2 weeks before the election, according to some polls, right?
Right.
It's not surprising that he's just not good at some of these things. What's really amazing is he's as good as he is.
Does every knock of the media mean a boost for him, Kristen? Is that one of the things that might be keeping him close because he's constantly going after the mainstream media?
Yes. Yes, and I can't say, being part of the mainstream media, that I don't agree with sometimes the media taking out of context things that he says, asking him questions they wouldn't ask of Hillary Clinton. I mean, I'm part of the mainstream media, and I'm telling you, a majority of people are left-leaning in the mainstream media. So if you think that's not bleeding into their coverage, fine, go ahead. Don't look at all of their Facebook pages and all of their social media posts.
Right.
But it is, he does have a case to make in that regard. Is it all of his case? No. And if he loses, are there people? I tend to think most of Donald Trump supporters are like Mike Lotus sitting to my left, who is not going to go out and burn down villages and have pitchforks and everything if he loses. If Donald Trump loses, I think the majority of Trump supporters will understand it's because, plain and simple, he lost it. He lost support for many, many, many reasons. So this scare tactic, this he's a danger by even bringing up the fact that he might contest the results or that he's not going to go along with it, to me, is hyperbolic.
You know, let's not forget also that in his race for the nomination, he was a media darling. Mm-hmm. He was all over cable news. It was a rare day where you would turn on Morning Joe on MSNBC and Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski didn't have Trump calling in.
Right.
So they gave him tens of millions of dollars of free advertising.
Because he was the best story out there. First and foremost, the media likes a good story.
The conspiracy theory is that they thought he was the guy who Hillary could most easily beat.
Which is
maybe
accurate.
True. I don't know. He certainly is someone who draws viewers and draws listeners, whether you like him or not, and people in the media want
that. We're going to go to calls. Let's go to Robert listening to us in Cottonwood, California on KQMS. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Northern California.
Yeah, I'm up here doing. But, boy, you know, liberals are giving me so much fodder, I don't know where to start. You know, you guys are talking about illegal elections. What did John Kerry do in 2004? Wasn't he all over Ohio? Nobody mentions that, do they? Huh?
I'm not following what you say. What do you mean he was John all over Ohio?
For him, you know, Lurch. The guy that was running for president back then, okay? When he lost, he said that the election was rigged in Ohio, and he was going against them. Plus, and then we were talking about the pollsters. How about the pollsters for that year, 2004? John Kerry and his crew were so excited because of the exit polls had him as winning. What happened? Oops. It looks like this one, that one.
There's no question that there are polling organizations that are wrong each and every election. There's also some polling organizations that are right. And again, at this particular point, we've got to wait just two more weeks to find out who's right and who's wrong. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. And if you live in the Chicagoland area or the Chicago area, specifically within the city, the museum is one of the early voting sites. And early voting starts in Chicago tomorrow. So if you want to come down and vote at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, we're at 360 North State. The voting booths are already set up. Literally right downstairs from where we're doing this program. They're all lined up, ready for the voters starting tomorrow morning. And again, that's going to run for a couple of weeks. So come on down. And again, if you come down and vote at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, you'll also get free admission to go through the museum that day. And we'll be open all of the days that early voting participants can come on in and vote. So come on down and see us and vote and look around the museum. Also, program note, 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to be doing the final broadcast of Campaign 2016, and we're doing it live from Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. We'll have a large studio audience. You're invited to come to Wisconsin. That's Paul Ryan's home district, so we should have good knockdown, drag-out discussion of the future of the Republican Party in addition to what's happening in Campaign 2016. And again, if you want to come to the broadcast, just send a note, RSVP at Carthage.edu, RSVP at Carthage. Carthage.edu. We'd love to have you in the audience for the final broadcast of Beyond the Beltway this year. Let's go to Mary listening to us in San Francisco on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Mary.
This is Greg.
Greg, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Well, I look at a different point of view. Republican or Democrat, everybody should be upset if there's election fraud going on. And it's already been proven with Hillary Clinton and her opponent, where the DNC already said no matter what he did, they were going to elect Hillary Clinton. And this is a fact. He got it in their emails. Nobody denied it. But nobody wants to talk about that. That's election fraud.
Well, listen, stay on the line, because let's spend some time and let's dive in to the story of Bob Cramer, who has been a guest on this show for many, many years. He is one of those that was caught by Mr. O'Keefe in trying to talk about in encouraging violence at Trump rallies. So I'm going to let you make the case. You made it briefly before. I want to get everybody's reaction, because I think, at least Michael, I think you know Bob Cramer. A lot of people around the table know Bob. He's been on the show. His wife is Jan Schakowsky, congresswoman. Big supporter. I mean, talk about a guy who got caught doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, it was pretty
upsetting. But it hasn't got the publicity that some of these other issues have
gotten. No, it should get more publicity. I mean, some pretty bad acting going on, and that came out in those videos. You know, I don't know if he was the guy who said, you know, we get street guys who are crazy and put them in line and they provoke fights. And that's what we want, because that gets in the media and builds the narrative that, you know, Trump's people are violent. It's like, what the hell is this? This is not the way people should be conducting political campaigns in a civilized country. And it was great that he got caught, and I hope there are consequences.
Kristen, is there going to be any consequences on this?
I mean, he lost his job, and so did his cohort. So obviously even the DNC has realized this was not kosher, what they were doing, or maybe the publicity was so bad. I watched the videos. I have to say, I didn't feel, having followed politics in this state, which is very dirty, I didn't see a big, huge smoking gun, but is it thuggish behavior, what they did? Yes. And do I see a double standard that if this were not happening on the Hillary Clinton side, that you would have all, or I'm sorry, on the Donald Trump side, that you would all have all of these Hillary Clinton supporters up in arms, that you had someone legitimately trying to, you know, throw some of these rallies? And so for all the times that we had people saying that Donald Trump rallies were full of people, you know, whatever word you want to use, hillbillies, racist, buffoons, and then you find out that actually the DNC is feeding into that and trying to play that narrative out, I think there would be a lot more outrage if the situation were reversed.
Well, also, I mean, as someone who was at the rally in Chicago, the one that got canceled, I mean, I saw with my own eyes, I saw who was throwing the punches and who was receiving the punches. The people throwing the punches were the anti-Trump people, not the Trump people. The Trump people were on the receiving end of that. And yet that's not the way the national media, and including Ted Cruz and a lot of Republicans, that's not the way they gravitated. And the story of people of violence at Trump rallies was a dominant story for about 6 weeks in this country.
Right.
Wherever Donald Trump was, it was, oh, there's going to be you know, disturbances that night.
Right.
And now we have a case that was fostered by a Democratic plot. Now, where is all the media that gave 6 weeks of coverage to that story? Why are they not outraged? They were duped by Bob Cramer.
Or they don't really care that they were duped. I mean, look, I've been one of the people that's been saying that and WikiLeaks actually confirmed half of my conspiracy theory that, you know, yes, the election is rigged. There's two Democrats on the ballot. And, you know, that's just like a funny meme. But the fact is that the WikiLeaks did confirm with the John Podesta emails that Trump was going to be the easiest one to beat. And was it a conspiracy that the media put him up front to beat all the other Republicans? Well, no, he beat the other Republicans for a lot of reasons. Other than that, they were all split and everything else like that. But the fact of the matter is, why would anybody in their right mind ever think that the media would treat Donald Trump fairly in any event?
Michael, I want to go back to you. You know Bob Cramer.
What is
your take on the tapes that you have seen and have been publicized?
Well, I think first of all, the actions described on the tapes is inexcusable. Unlike you, I think it has gotten a good amount of publicity. I mean, I've read about this in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the Chicago Sun-Times, the Chicago Tribune.
On page A17, it was in our paper. But
okay, but it's gotten coverage. All right, I think.
Not,
you know, frankly,
not like the comments of Donald Trump talking to Billy Bush. Different coverage. Completely different coverage.
Well,
one was the boorish behavior of a Republican candidate for president, and that videotape should have been played maybe over and over, maybe not over and over again, but that you compare the coverage of that videotape with the coverage of what Bob Cramer and his other cohorts were doing with the support of the Democratic Party, with some even footsteps to the White House in that particular case, where they were encouraging violence at the rally of a political opponent.
I think the
compare that as major stories.
But you can't compare the two stories because, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, the Access Hollywood video and recording is titillating. And we love to be titillated more than anything else, even in our politics. So what about
the importance of the story? You have one candidate. It basically, Donald, that tape reinforced a perception that people had of boorish behavior by Donald Trump. There had been other instances of it. It got played over and over. It was the dominant story for over a week in this country. And my comparison, when you compare it with the idea that there were paid operatives out there. I mean, agent provocateurs. We're talking about agent provocateurs
out there to start
a rally. And because of the way those rallies turned out, which was all negative publicity about Donald Trump, the people that were instigating that, they just get a little piece of video.
Okay, so look at the way the two parties handled each of the situations you're describing. When the story came out about what the Hillary contractors were doing and trying to foment some violence, the two operatives were immediately forced to resign. They were eliminated right away. When the Access Hollywood audio recording came out, Trump could have easily said, listen, I was foolish, I was stupid, I apologize, and I know better now. And he could have made it a 24-hour story. And he himself made it a week-long story because he kept saying, maybe I'm going to apologize.
It went after the women. And then all the women came out.
Okay.
I think the the O'Keefe videos are important beyond even just what's in them, because there's no particular reason to think these aren't the tip of the iceberg. Here are two guys, Creamer and the other guy whose name I can't remember. But they're talking to people who they aren't longtime associates, aren't people they know very well, and they're this open. What else are these people doing? What else are they up to? And this notion—
The
idea that when Trump says the election's rigged, and then we get this glimpse into a whole machine that operates in this fashion— it supports his narrative that that's the case.
Bruno.
Well, and worse yet, if you look at the other part of that story was that Bob Creamer has visited numerous times with Barack Obama. And this goes all the way back to one of the times I was on the show before 2008, right after the election when Obama won it, where one of the other guests here said, oh, well, Obama got lucky. There was a lot of stuff on Hillary, but there was stuff on him too. The fact of the matter is that both parties have plumbers and, you know, Nixon's guys were.
Right.
Both parties use, to some degree, dirty tricks. The problem.
What are the Republicans doing this year? What have they done this year?
You know, I'd like to see it just to find out what it is, because it would be I don't like bad things happening.
I would challenge it. In the past, do I think both parties play dirty? Yes, but if there's evidence of any Republican or Donald Trump skullduggery that's out there, believe me, the news media would have shoved it down our throats.
You could imply that it seems that that was what my implication was, and it's not. I'm looking at what's going on right now, and I'm saying this is the Democratic Party, leaving aside the policies where you may agree or disagree or so that you can debate on it, it is acting triumphalist and eliminationist toward the right and toward anything. I think they see a kill shot coming, and they are going for the kill shot. And I don't think they are. I think it is all no holds barred. And quite frankly, you go to the IRS situation, you go to all the other stuff that's going on nationally, and I think Barack Obama knows exactly what's going on. He's a Chicago Paul from the very beginning.
1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers on the line. We will bring them into the conversation when we roll on from Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Dave, listening to us on WKBN, and he's in Cleveland tonight. Congratulations on heading to the World Series.
Yes, yes. That's good news. Let me just, so I don't take up too much time, but I wanted to get to the point. It's a shell game, but it's a multiple shell game. And as you've already talked about, you brought up, it's obvious there's voter fraud that's existed, but that's not the real story. That's the distraction for the media to use as a narrative, because the real story is what's gone from the White House, the Justice Department, the FBI, the 100 papers that were dumped just recently last week, the proof that there were trafficking in emails that were going back and forth, even from POTUS, who had, under a pseudonym, denies any knowledge of it. There's so much there. There's so much there that Woodward and Bernstein would be just licking their chops if this was 1970. So, and 72. There's no way you can equate this, but what the media likes to say is, well, there's this and well, there's that. And yeah, and now we have a precedent of a society without even following the laws. So what's left? A banana republic. So yeah, is it rigged? Oh yeah, it looks really rigged. And the videos of Veritas, well yeah, that just underscores it, but that's just showing more of it. It's like the iceberg, like you're saying. But the media is not hungry. Journalists aren't hungry. Journalism is dead.
All right, hang on just a second. We have a journalist here, and I want her to respond. But I want to put it in context so you can sort of explain to the audience. As a journalist, I mean, with all the WikiLeaks items that are coming out, I mean, hundreds, you know, what, 20,000 a day, how does a journalist just digest that? How do you go about, I mean, you're sitting around with your colleagues at the Tribune. Where do you even begin to find out where the real meat is in those stories?
Well, I think one of the things that's happened with journalism is it's become more local. So I think we do let our national affiliates deal more with national stories like mm-hmm. that. But in terms of journalism being dead, I have to say, in Chicago, you wouldn't know 99% of what you know about what the mayor does, his schedule, how much money he raises, red light cameras and the scam that was. Any sort of corruption, not even corruption, just the finances of the city, the finances of the school district, and all of those stories that you actually have come to know about your city, you would not know if it weren't for a handful, and I mean a handful, of reporters at the Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune who are digging into those stories and filing hundreds and hundreds of FOIs every week.
There's no question. Okay. I think everybody at this table would agree with what you just said. They'd second it. But the question is, the first part of your question was sort of your Washington Bureau or others, other entities. Because of the difference and because of the changing economics of the newspaper business, are decisions like going after national stories, are they relinquished to others? Maybe it is the Washington Post. Maybe it is the New York Times. Maybe it's the Wall Street Journal. Is that responsibility relinquished by many even great newspapers because those entities have a deeper bench, or they may be investing more money in going after stories?
Yes, and I wouldn't even say that the bench is that deep even with those entities. I mean, look at newspapers. How many of you subscribe to a newspaper? So don't complain about the news media, and I can only speak for print, not doing enough to dig into these stories when you are not supporting our product at the end of the day, and we are forced to shrink. Yes, newsrooms are much smaller than they are, and it's a good thing that we have things like WikiLeaks and Judicial Watch and all of these other groups now, Politico, who have come onto the fringes. You still have your traditional media like you do with the Chicago Tribune, but it's a good thing that we have these other outlets to help.
Now, Hillary Clinton did a masterful job at the debate the other night when Chris Wallace asked her about some of the WikiLeaks allegations,
right,
of which there are many, and I'm sure you're upset with many of them because we've talked about some of
yes.
them. And she just pivots, and she blames it all on the Russians.
Right.
She brilliant, played, brilliant, or disgusting?
Or both?
Well, it's actually some of both. I mean, what she does is she says, I won't deal with the content or the substance because look at the source. But frankly, the source is irrelevant from my perspective. The fact is the substance of the WikiLeaks has shown the internal workings of the Clinton campaign, which I'm not sure the internal workings of any campaign would be the most honorable to show. But certainly we've seen, you know, certainly in the primary, the manipulation against Bernie Sanders, it was clearly not a fair game.
What about the FBI? What about the FBI and the Justice Department and the papers that were just released and the fact that you had two State Department employees, two FBI officials, conversations, and then the president is saying they're lying. I mean, he's lying about the fact that he knew about emails going back and forth on an unsecured server.
Dave, I've got to ask you this question because I think this is the frustration that I have. There's been so much out there. Frankly, I can't imagine why anyone, and I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for what I'm going to say, I can't imagine anyone within the sound of my voice who will vote for Hillary Clinton and look themselves in a mirror. It is beyond my personal comprehension. And yet, she's at 50% in an ABC poll. So my question to you is, with all the stuff that you know, and you seem to be an informed voter, with all the stuff that's out there every day, 10,000 more WikiLeaks coming out, I mean, just this bombardment of stuff. The indictment has been made against Hillary Clinton, and the majority of people that are going to vote appear to vote for her. What does that tell you about the people and the citizens of this country at this time? What's your answer?
I would say that they are not as well-informed or literate because we're used to the social media conduits. We're not reading the papers, but we're also not asking questions. But look at the way the average citizens are curious. They're not curious, and they're being spoon-fed stuff, and people know it.
I want to get everybody's I want to start with Bruno. Bruno, what is your answer to the question that I just asked?
I think I'm close to the caller's, Dave's position. I would articulate it a little bit differently. We're a very wealthy nation. We know that there's problems going on. We know that there's something going wrong, but we don't want to blow it all up, so we're not sure what we're going to do. And look what you have here. You've got a blow it all up candidate. I'm going to change everything, and he says it in the wrong way and does all the wrong things. And then you've got, and I think it was P.J. O'Rourke who put it this way, and he was supporting Clinton in this one, even though he's a Republican. He said she's horrible and she's awful, but she's a known awful. She's a known horrible. Trump, we don't know anything about, and he could be an unknown horrible, and we don't know how bad that horrible could get. And I think what's happening here, and this is why they're voting for, I think people are just holding their nose, and they're saying, this is what we have. This is the only choice we have.
We're going to a break right now. I want to get the reaction from all of our guests here and anyone listening on the phone to the answer to the question that I just asked. Why is she ahead at this moment with everything we know about her? Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Michael Bauer, I made a very strong statement before the break. I said, I don't know how people could vote for Hillary Clinton and look themselves in the mirror. And I want you to tell me, because you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, you're going to be able to look yourself in the mirror and tell me why.
I'm going to be able to look at myself in the mirror and have no regrets about this. There are four candidates running for president on the November 8 ballot. Two of them are not viable, but right off the bat. I'm sorry, but Gary Johnson is not a viable candidate. He's not going to be the next president. And Jill Stein is not viable. She's not going to be the next president. So that leaves two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Donald Trump, from my perspective, is an amazingly ignorant human being. Besides being mean-spirited and the numerous character flaws he has, and Hillary has her own character flaws, but Trump is just really an ignorant human being. He, you know, even in making his arguments, he's unable to articulate what his arguments are. I mean, ignorant.
Just between what we're talking about,
yes. Okay.
Ignorance to you is worse than dishonesty.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Which is worse for you, Bruno?
I gotta say, it's a tough race, but I would rather. I would take ignorance over dishonesty, especially with someone who has been so. It's not even dishonesty so much with Hillary Clinton. It's almost like a mean-spirited, mendacious dishonesty.
I want to go to Kristen. Let's see. What's your answer to that question?
I think there are a lot of people who have very legitimate reasons for voting for Hillary Clinton. I think with all of the so-called scandals, nothing is as hits the psyche as much as what you have with Donald Trump, his own voice on something like the Access Hollywood video. And I don't want to focus on that, but I'm just saying between Benghazi and the email scandal and using a different server,
but there's no smoking gun with her.
There was not one thing
that
someone...
Do you think she's
someone,
dishonest? I want to go back to just my
of course I
ignorance.
Do.
Ignorance versus dishonesty.
She is dishonest. She's a product of Washington for the past 30 years. But I do think she clicks into these themes that are popular with voters. And you can talk about Donald Trump being ignorant. Let's just talk about the major electorate. I mean, they like hearing that college can be free. That we just tax the rich. You know, wealthy people, successful people are bad guys. That's popular with people. That's what she's running on. She's talking about all of these themes that actually can't really happen. We can't keep providing more health care for people for free. But it works. She is the first woman. And I will say, the Republican Party has done a terrible job of trying to attract a more diverse base. Latinos, Hispanics, and the gay community. And I don't blame anyone in that community necessarily out strongly for Hillary Clinton.
So is the answer then, when I ask the question, how can so many people vote for her? The answer, what I'm hearing you say, is a lot of voters are ignorant.
No, I just gave you a bunch of reasons where when you are sitting and watching these debates, she is promising a lot of things that, you know, the United States can't afford.
Deliver, that she can't deliver.
She can deliver it, but you want to talk about the $19 trillion deficit debt going up? Sure, go ahead. That doesn't resonate with people as much as someone promising free college tuition.
Michael, your answer to my question.
I think you
obviously can look yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because some of his policies sound good to me, and he's much better than Hillary Clinton. So I don't have a problem. You know, I'm not going to have any problem looking myself in the mirror. Understanding why people are voting for Hillary Clinton, though, is a bunch of aspects. First, there's a Democrat discipline and team spirit. I'm married to a Democrat. They will just do what needs to be done once their person is picked in a way that the Republicans don't. When Trump has trouble, you see the senior Republicans fleeing for the doors and stabbing him in the back and trying to get away from the cloud of shrapnel, where the Democrats will close ranks and they will fight for their candidate even when she's got real problems. And they'll change the subject and attack the messenger and try to defend her. So in a way, I admire it.
They're much better at politics.
Hillary Clinton also taps into something. This is kind of a middle-class respectability. People don't want to do something that's weird. They don't want to – and she is kind of boring and been around a long time. And people who don't think a lot about politics, she seems like a safe, respectable choice. Also, her problems, they're very serious, but they're a little bit complicated. And if you don't follow this stuff, you don't understand Comey, the FBI, the standard was enough to, you know, put her in. People who are into politics and follow this stuff, we got three people here with law degrees. You know, we understand this. Normal people, they hear the fragmentary details, and it's not enough to shake them off of this kind of familiar face, seems kind of boring and normal and stable, that's really a huge advantage that she has.
So I want to add one thing. You know, one of our basic concepts in our society that's so critical is we believe in an independent judiciary. And when the judiciary rules, we fall in line, even though the courts do not have armies to enforce their decisions. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump spent weeks railing against a federal district court judge from Indiana, who's the presiding judge on the Trump University case, merely because he's of Mexican ancestry. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he didn't spend weeks. The media did. He made a comment, and then the media spent weeks going after
him. He made multiple comments. Kristen, he made multiple comments about it. He didn't say it just once or twice.
The media spent multiple weeks.
Well, and okay. But you said, again, that I think I would say that look,
that scares me.
We can go through, but if I went back right now and I did a database search, I could find all kinds of cases where the independent judiciary was attacked for their own reasons. Barack Obama attacked the independent judiciary from the State of the Union address. Barack Obama, there's now emails and some other stuff going on with WikiLeaks where the Democrats talked about how they pressured, indirectly pressured Roberts to change his vote on Obamacare. So, again, every time we hear this kind of thing that Donald Trump is beyond the pale or Donald Trump did this or Donald Trump did that, we can go back and find out that Barack Obama back in 2008 said that parties in power can control the outcome of elections. That was something he said prior to being elected.
Let's go to calls. Tom in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead, Tom.
Good evening, Bruce. You know, I'd like to know how much of the problem with the WikiLeaks reporting and the Donald Trump being covered in sort of selective ways mm-hmm. is due to liberal bias of the media. How much of it is due to about 20 years ago, the businesses taking over the news organizations mm-hmm. and wanting them to be profit centers, and therefore they become more entertainment magazines than objective journalism? And how much of it is the Cheryl Atkinson effect of we don't want to upset who's ever in power? If you recall, she was the journalist who her beat was the Justice Department,
right.
And she was trying to investigate, I believe it was Fast and Furious, mm-hmm. and Eric Holder banned her from the Justice Department, and so virtually wasn't able to do her job, and now she's out of CBS.
I want to ask Kristen to take a crack at that.
You know, I think there's some – I mentioned earlier that I do think the media generally is more left-leaning, and that's just based on my day-to-day experience. I've been a reporter in Chicago for 22 years. These people are my friends. I know they're their political leanings. But I will not go so far as to say that that is openly and readily available in what they report. I mean, nobody goes after Rahm Emanuel more than some of the reporters. He's the Democratic mayor of Chicago, more than some of the reporters in the newsroom who I think are probably more liberal leaning. So I don't know that you can easily measure that or make that connection.
I want to talk about the other points when we come back. 1-800-723-8209. Tom, thank you very much. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. Back shortly.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
In Chicago, let's go to Marty, listening to us in Maryland. He's listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Go ahead, Marty.
Hey, thank you, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I just have to say that, in terms of answering the question that you asked in the previous segment,
yeah,
is I think that so much of what people have against Hillary is really based on perception and conspiracy theories and hearsay. And, you know, the stuff that's coming out from the WikiLeaks, assuming that these are all true, are, it's really not, you know, it's not surprising. Oh, she's a politician and she's ambitious. But the thing that I really have to take issue with is, from Bruce's and Kristen's point, is I think you guys are being disingenuous when you say that the media keeps harping on why he would be willing to accept the outcome of the election. It's because he brought up the damn issue. He keeps harping on it. That's why the media keeps asking him about it.
Well, let me make my point. When the debate was over, every single major news organization gravitated to that comment. There wasn't one that did not gravitate to that. Now, this gets to what Kristen said earlier. There's a groupthink that exists. I mean, you would think that at least one newspaper would have talked about something else that came up in that debate. You know, her response or lack of response to WikiLeaks questions or things that Donald Trump said in the debate. But it was unanimous. Everybody focused on one thing, and then they've kept on that for about 3 days now. Kristen?
I would agree. I mean, they had really interesting. I loved Chris Wallace as the moderator of that debate. He got into, you know, you asked them questions about things like social issues, abortion. They talked a lot about that. None of that came up. Merrick Garland, you know, Supreme Court justices. And I still keep coming back to, what's the point of that question? If he says he doesn't accept the results, who cares? I mean, what is the fear? I don't understand why that was so offensive for him to say, you know, caught on the spot that, you know, he's going to wait it out. He doesn't know what he's going to say. Why is that so dangerous and frightening? And those are the words we hear mainstream media saying.
Marty, one other thing I want to talk about is the media made such a big deal that they didn't shake hands at the end of the debate. They hate each other. Why pretend that they like each other? I mean, this is part of the BS that a lot of people hate about politics. Oh, you know, the good senator from Alabama and the great senator from they know that it's BS. So the fact that two people who hate each other don't shake hands, to me, there's honesty that they don't shake hands.
But that's
it's like talking about, you know, the way they reacted at the Al Smith dinner the other evening, which gets all kinds of public. Talk about the consummate inside the Beltway issue. People talking to millionaires, you know, at the Waldorf Astoria, you know, that they were mean and nasty to each other. The people out in Idaho and Indiana who are trying to, you know, put $2 together to pay for their kids' college, what do they care about? What do they care about jokes that they're delivering because they were too rough on each other. Come on, let's get real as to what's really important in the country.
If you're trying to be the leader of the free world, I don't think it's too much to ask that you can engage in a little bit of decorum, even if you think it's phony.
Absolutely.
And I also think, in terms of the media harping on that question, if it was just a media creation, how come all sorts of Republican officials, secretaries of state, people who were involved in elections were coming out and talking about that?
Because they are all part of the Republican establishment, people who they know right now are never going to get another job, or they would never get a job in a Trump administration. So it's easy easy for them to do. And by the way, the quickest thing, regardless of what party, the quickest way for you to get newspaper coverage or media coverage is to be a member of one party who criticizes that party. If you are a turncoat, the media will love that you are attacking your party. And they've done it with the Democrats. They do it with the Republicans. But this year, the field day is with the Republicans.
We saw how many rats jumped a sinking ship on Romney's and McCain's campaign.
There's no question about it. And the question is, are those same evangelicals who sat on their hands 4 years ago when Mitt Romney needed their votes, are those same evangelicals going to sit on their hands again? We've got to move on. Let's go to Andrew, listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce.
Hello.
I wanted to somewhat defend Donald Trump as an ignorant person, not fully, but somewhat. And if we look at the issues that most Americans agree on these days, for instance, or things that need to be done, for instance, Social Security, tax reform, definitive foreign policy, simpler health care, it represents the nastiness and the political the fact that the Democrats look the other way on some of these issues, the only way he was able to get traction was to interject offensive, vulgar comments. And I'm not saying that's right, but that actually represents the depth of ignorance of the people on these issues. And the Republican establishment was not able to get traction on these issues.
I want to let Michael Loftus let Michael Loftus comment on this. Lotus.
I don't exactly agree with what you're saying. What I do think is the case is that a lot of people who feel like they're having a hard time, that if you have a lot of politicians acting like it's kind of a game, it's a boxing match where we all shake hands, they feel like the gravity of the problem they're having isn't being addressed. And I think Trump coming in and disregarding a lot of the decorum was very appealing to people. I don't think it's necessarily because it's, vulgar or in bad taste or anything like that, but they were feeling like, this guy's actually serious about how bad things are for me, and he's not playing the same game these guys are all playing, and it was a way to get their attention and support.
By the way, according to one of the stories, it was the Clinton campaign that did not want to have any conversation or shaking of hands between the spouses prior to the debate. Now, I don't know whether that's been verified.
The third debate. Yes.
So it could be neither side probably wanted to shake hands with the other side. Let's go to David in Oakland, California, listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air. David, are you there on line four? David, are you there? If not, let's go to AJ in Pasadena, California. Go ahead. You're listening to us on satellite radio tonight.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
I just had a really, really quick comment on the question itself. I think it's a little unfair. I think most people see Donald Trump as dishonest as well. So I think it's ignorance and dishonesty versus dishonesty, which makes it seem a little more understandable why people are voting for Hillary Clinton.
Where is Donald Trump dishonest in your view?
And I think back to the previous caller, his perception. So we have his response on Access Hollywood, a lot of people don't buy. All of the things that have come up on Trump Foundation, his light grasp on the facts, I think people might see that as ignorance, but I think a lot of people just see that as him lying about items or facts that he wants to use to further his cause.
Michael, is lying and dishonesty the same thing? So is he right? It's ignorance and dishonesty?
I don't know whether it's the case that voters perceive Trump as dishonest. His supporters think he's a truth teller and tribune of the people who speaks truth to power. Whether the median voter thinks he's dishonest, I don't know. I think one of the things he does is he'll be talking, he'll be riffing in one of his speeches, and he'll get some things wrong. Sometimes he cleans it up, sometimes he doesn't. I don't think he's intentionally particularly dishonest.
Thanks for your call. With all of the revelations that have come out from WikiLeaks, it seems to me that if I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, I would be more riled up in reading these things than probably any other sector of the American public. Do you agree with that, Michael?
I agree with you.
So are they going to stay home?
Well, but I think where that's going to be fought out is actually in the next Congress, particularly in the next Senate. You're going to see the split we see in the Republicans right now. You're going to see in the next Senate, whether the Democrats are in the majority or the minority, the Democratic caucus is going to be a very split caucus. You're going to have Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders pulling the caucus far to the left. You're going to have a number of senators who are up for re-election in 2018, in red or purple states, pulling the caucus far to the middle. And they're going to have the same war that we're seeing in the Republican Party right now.
But
that's where the
fight
is.
But in this campaign, Kristen, do you think that's where – maybe that's maybe one of the stories to watch in the next couple of weeks is to see if indeed there is defection? I don't think Bernie Sanders voters are going to vote for Donald Trump. They might go elsewhere. But it seems to me that especially if you're in your 20s or your 30s and maybe this is your first campaign, you look – I mean every major aspect of what's come out from WikiLeaks, it seems to me that it reinforces much of what Bernie Sanders was saying during the campaign.
None of that is more to this group more insulting than what Donald Trump has said. So, no. I don't see any division. I see crushing Donald Trump as being a unification factor with this group. And you have Hillary out on the campaign trail now, trying to at least appeal to millennials and do some of these comedy shows and talk about, you know, student loan debt and things she wasn't talking about before. But no, I don't see there being this great division because Trump has become so offensive to this group on all of these other issues like immigration and gay rights that there's no way those Bernie Sanders supporters are going to defect.
Bruno?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, and this was only a few weeks ago, they were doing a big survey of Sanders voters, and it was like 9, 10, and 11%, and I don't know which was going where, but Gary Johnson was pulling 9, Stein was pulling 10, and Trump was pulling 11, or maybe they were different. Mm-hmm. But that survey at that time said 10% of Sanders voters. Now, maybe that's changed, but if Trump was pulling 10% of Sanders voters, that's a problem. And given the fact that Sanders' support was almost entirely the very rich white side of the progressive white side of the Democratic spectrum, mm-hmm. that whole trade and immigration thing and jobs might have more of a pull on some of the Sanders voters. I don't think any of these things are as linear as we think they
are. Back shortly from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications and the National Radio Hall of Fame each and every Sunday night. And just take a moment, to offer condolences to the family of Herb Kent. Herb Kent was an inductee into the National Radio Hall of Fame, a legendary Chicago broadcaster. He passed away at age 88 today. And if you are of my generation and you grew up listening to radio, especially if you were African American, I mean, I would say that Herb Kent was probably the first successful African-American disc jockey in the United States. He was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 1995, good friend. And again, we will miss him. And again, we offer our condolences to his family. Let's now go back to calls, and let's go to Ron, listening to us in Green Bay, also listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Got a lot of callers on Sirius XM tonight. Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, from what I've been hearing for the invasion in Mosul,
yeah,
it's going better than they expected.
Right.
And then Trump's comments was just the opposite. I just wondered what was
Trump's comment that offended you?
Well, he didn't offend me. He just the exact opposite. He said they're finding out it's much, much harder. The fight.
Oh, what he said in the debate the other evening. Okay, I thought that maybe you were aware of something that happened this afternoon that we were not aware of. But again, any reaction to that, Bruno?
There was some intimation I heard where he also basically said that the Mosul attack and the timing and everything like that is designed to help Hillary, which, you know, I don't know that that's the case or whether it's not the case. It's very clear that people, you know, and this again, I said this earlier, in 2008, Barack Obama said parties in power have the ability to move elections or have an impact on elections that other people don't have. The use of the military is one of those things. Is the attack on Mosul time to help Hillary Clinton? I don't think so, and I think that's the kind of distractionary nonsense that Trump brings up when, if he was a normal candidate operating normally, he would have...
But it'd say the exact opposite of what all the news reports are.
What do you expect from him at this point? I mean, like I said, I'm a very, very conservative guy who doesn't want to see Hillary Clinton be president, and I've never been able to pull the trigger for Trump because he's just not a real candidate. He's not... To me, he's completely non-credible.
Also, Ron, his comments were made earlier in the week with the debate, and again, there has been some positive response, according to the reports, over the last, let's say, 48 hours. Michael, your comment?
One thing I'll point out is one of the criticisms he's had repeatedly is that this administration, and I think generally, when the military activity is being taken, that's very politicized. They announce things in advance. They do it for political advantage. And he says, and I think there's some truth to this, that the military advantage is wasted if you don't have surprise, if your enemy is as the punch is telegraphed in advance. Having
the
less
Pentagon
of that would be better.
Otherwise.
Well, the Pentagon, you know, well,
they were dropping leaflets.
Okay, well, the Pentagon just spent $4 trillion on two wars that are botched, so they don't always get it right.
Michael, your response. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, they were dropping leaflets, and they were.
So this is a case where it makes sense to tell people in advance. You have a besieged city. Sometimes you tell them surrender, and it'll do some good.
No.
The basic principle is that reserving the element of surprise is something we could probably do more of.
But Michael, the problem is in the city of Mosul are over a million civilians, all right? And what the Pentagon is trying to do is give warning to those civilians that those who can escape should escape now. Right, and get out while they can still save their own lives and not become casualties of the war against Mosul.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump talking about at the debate while the war is going poorly is similar to his comment about Aleppo. Well, Aleppo's already fallen. What difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say what difference does it make, but he said Aleppo's already fallen.
Mm-hmm.
No, it hasn't. There's 250,000 people in eastern Aleppo. It's a serious issue. And again, this is my issue with Donald Trump. He is woefully ignorant about these serious issues and has no position.
Michael, as a Democrat, you are also big. Again, you've been on this program before. You are more of a hawk than a dove.
Yes.
Why?
I think we have a responsibility to take some action to try to stop the slaughter in Mosul. And I'm sorry, slaughter in Aleppo and in Syria, and to stem the flow of refugees that are fleeing for their lives from Syria through Europe. And the fact that we're not taking any action whatsoever, I think, will be a permanent stain on the Obama administration.
And you also believe that the United States should be more willing to take refugees from around the world, most specifically in Syria.
Yes.
Into the United States.
Absolutely.
Because of?
Because there's a humanitarian problem, and these refugees are sitting, 5.5 million are sitting in refugee camps in Lebanon and Jordan. and in Turkey, and another 4.5 million are staying in displaced persons camps in Syria. And we should at least, by the fact that we're not taking any action to help them so they don't have to turn into refugees, we should at least be willing to open our doors, as we have in the past, for the Cambodians, the Laotians, the Vietnamese, and the Jews after the Holocaust. You know, we open our doors and take in people.
And Michael, what's your reaction to that? And what is the Trump position is the opposite of that.
I agree with Michael's humanitarian impulse. I don't agree with possibly the way to do it. The amount of displaced people from the violence that's going on in the Middle East is going to be monumental. Millions of people could be displaced. Spending money and making an effort to protect them, helping them to be in a secure place during the fighting. Trump has said the Gulf states have lots of territory and lots of money, and they're doing nothing. We could lean on them to do a lot more, but I don't think we should be bringing millions of people into our country who could be a hazard to us. We can't check their backgrounds. We have to balance between being humane and protecting ourselves. Doesn't mean we should do nothing.
Just to be particular, I never said bringing in millions of people.
Hillary Clinton.
I said, no. I mean, last year, or this year so far, we've brought in about 14,000. We could bring in a good number more. I think bringing in, you know, a quarter or a half of these refugees is obviously not
Let me tell you why I said the number I said. The fighting in Syria is very big. This fighting in Yemen. We have a situation where if oil prices continue to fall and Saudi Arabia is destabilized, we could have a chaotic situation there. If Saudi Arabia can't continue to subsidize the food prices and support the Egyptian government, tens of millions of people are going to be in desperate straits. That whole region could be in very bad shape. I don't want to establish the precedent that the solution is we're going to lodge people here. We need to be proactive about trying to solve problems there, help people there, use our own funds and the funds from our supposed allies in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf to pay to take care
of these
people.
The libertarian position on this?
The libertarian position is to do nothing and just sit here and actually I'm kind of in between all the different parties on that. You have to be somewhat humanitarian. You have to be very careful about who you let in and how you let them in. You do not want to establish a precedent. Libertarians generally are like, well, we don't need to do anything for anybody, and we're all fine here, and America for the Americans, and we should just be as take care of ourselves. And that's not my position. My position is probably pretty close to Mike's, which is, and incidentally, I think whether he was mistaken or not, or whether he made too many mistakes or handled or botched it, that's what W is trying to do with Iraq and with the war, is to say this area is going to be better if it is more democratic and more stable. I'm not saying that he stabilized it, but clearly if you aren't going to take people in here, and if you can't take in the millions that I think Mike accurately says are waiting in the wings to come flying over if things get really bad, then you have to do something to make things livable there.
Then what is the policy, which is the difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, is Donald Trump says that we need extreme vetting. Hillary Clinton says that the vetting that we have is sufficient. Is there any way, can there be an objective assessment by the media, Kristen, as to who is, whether the vetting that we have right now is it good enough? Do we know yet?
I mean, I've read really conflicting reports. I've read that we do have extreme vetting in place, and that sometimes you just cannot control some of these lone wolf situations in this country. On the other hand, I was actually a Rand Paul supporter in the primary, and I do believe that we destabilize the Middle East sometimes with these hawkish behaviors, and that our military is so precise and so advanced that we have been able to, in certain conflicts, airdrop, you know, resources and food and medicine into some of these mountainous areas with absolute precision to help some of these communities, but that we cannot be the police for the rest of the country. We are $19 trillion in debt. I mean, I do think, and I agree with what Paul said during the primary, coming from a position of bankruptcy is not a position of strength. And we do need to rethink the way that we keep interjecting in all of these conflicts that are civil wars, where they don't want our participation, but to provide help for refugees should be our priority.
Michael?
You know, there was an opportunity we had 5 years ago, where there were moderate rebels in Syria, and all they wanted from the United States was some arms so they could fight Assad. And the Obama administration, for years, would not give them any weapons whatsoever. And giving them weapons would have been a very easy thing to do and, frankly, a very cheap thing to do. They didn't want American troops. They didn't want American blood. But anyone who thinks Assad is not as much of a problem as ISIS is, I would strongly disagree with. They are equally horrible problems.
When Donald Trump says he wants to build up the military, what does he want to build up the military for, Michael?
Deterrence against attacks from nation states. He's been pretty clear he doesn't want to do...
How would it deter the Russians?
How would what? Military strength deter the Russians, I suppose?
Are you confident that if the military were built up, that he would use his position to thwart future expansionism on the part of the Russians?
I'm not sure he's real interested in confronting the Russians. He keeps saying there's no reason we can't make a deal with Putin that's reasonable, that's respects what he's probably reasonably wants, that doesn't conflict with us. We both have an enemy in Islamic terrorism, for example.
On that note, we say thank you to our guests. Don't go away.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Again, a reminder that on November 6th, 2 weeks from tonight, this will be the last broadcast of Campaign 2016. We will be live from Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That may still be a battleground state at that point. It's the home district of the Speaker, Paul Ryan. Sunday night, November 6th, 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time. If you want to attend, go to rsvp@carthage.edu. rsvp@carthage.edu. It's Carthage College. It's beautiful on the shores of Lake Michigan. And again, if you want to come down and see our final broadcast, we would love to have you participate. Let's go to Dave, listening tonight in Oakland, California. He's listening to us on XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, I'm glad the panelists brought that up because my understanding is we do go through extreme vetting for refugees, unlike the Syrians who walk to countries in Europe. They don't have a chance to check their backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So I think Trump is ignorant, but I also think he's dishonest because most illegal immigrants now come from Asia or Africa and not from Mexico. And I think he's dishonest about that because it's a critical campaign and successful campaign issue. So I think he's both honest and ignorant. But
dishonest. You think he's dishonest and ignorant?
Dishonest and ignorant.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thanks for correcting
okay.
me. But I think more importantly, when he had the opportunity, when he secured the nomination, to overcome his ignorance through diligence and study and through preparation for these debates, he chose not to do that. And by choosing not to prepare yourself as fully as you can for what I would say is the most important job in the world is disqualifying. You just don't want it.
Dave, I think you have articulated a frustration that millions or tens of millions of people have. And that is, in their heart, they would like to believe in Donald Trump. They believe he's out there saying things, speaking, being a vessel, if you will, for people who've been done wrong by a system that they feel is rigged. And yet, his lack of precise language, his lack of curiosity, his lack of preparation, all basic things that anyone seeking a successful career would normally do, the constant inability for him to catch him saying something stupid before he says it, not cleaning up after he says it, I think is a great frustration. And so it becomes a great disqualifier. Again, people will say maybe, well, maybe that's laziness, maybe whatever it is. It isn't dishonesty, and they'll make their case that dishonesty is still the important thing to them. But again, I don't think anybody, or there's a lot of people out there who even may end up voting for Donald Trump, are not somewhat disappointed that this alleged leader could have been a significant, great leader had he just prepared himself and he showed a little bit of intellect and a little bit of curiosity. And for the last 18 months, we've never seen him grow. Michael?
It's extreme.
I think that I can't go as far as to say we haven't seen him grow for 18 months. I can say that I'm very frustrated that he didn't prepare better for these debates, if he prepared at all. I think he prepared some for the second and third. The first one was a train wreck. And it's interesting, you know, I have colleagues who are lawyers, we prepare people to testify. There's a science to this. There's a set of practices. They're not alchemy. You know, you identify the likely questions. They're hard. You rehearse. You tell the truth, but you make sure you formulate your answer in a way that's the most effective way to present your case. And, you know, he's got a big law firm that was his big law firm that represents him. They have great lawyers at that law firm. I know some of them. And there's any number of people, and I was talking to some of my law school classmates, two of us, and I said, the three of us, if we'd have had, they paid us to
Five
take
minutes.
2 weeks off and prep him, he'd have done a million times better.
He chose
and he clearly
not
didn't
to.
Do it.
He chose
you
not
got
to.
Me, why not? I don't know.
I have to say Dave has the most poignant point probably of the whole night in that there were so many voters, you might have counted me among them, who after the primary, when he was officially the nominee, were willing to give him a chance. But I do put a lot of stock in debates, and you couldn't really judge him on the debates in the primary because there were seven or eight candidates on the stage, and there were 20 candidates to start with, and so you didn't get the real Donald Trump. You got little snippets here and there, and so I didn't feel like he really got a fair shake. But I remember telling myself, if he does, even Sarah Palin, for crying out loud, got into a room and tried to learn foreign policy and how to pronounce Ahmadinejad, and Donald Trump did none of that. He did none of that, and it's really, you know, I mean, so he's off my list, part of it.
Anecdotal. This is an anecdotal story. I have someone who was very close, I'm going to just leave it at that, very close to a winner of one of the apprentices. He's one of the apprentices. And I asked him months ago when Donald Trump started to rise, and I can't quote him by name, I said, "Tell what do I need to know about Donald Trump?" And he said, "He's the laziest guy I've ever met." He's lazy. He's made so much money, he hasn't had to work real hard in any significant way, other than obviously he makes decisions, which means that he's working. But insofar as just the day-to-day, the points that we're talking about tonight, preparing for a test that you're going to present yourself to the American people and to the free world, I am ready to lead the free world. Prepare for the test. Lazy was the word used. And that's disappointing, because that's the disappointment that I think if you're part of the troops that are out there and you're the Trumpsters, and maybe, you know, in 1992 you were part of the Perot Brigade, or you were for Patrick Buchanan, whatever it is, the populist movement that's out there that needs a leader. Right now, they needed a leader that was willing to work a little bit harder. Now, I may all be wrong. You know, 2 weeks from Tuesday, maybe Donald Trump is elected president of the United States. If he is, I hope he gets the message that it's time for him to sort of step up and be prepared to lead the free world. But right now, thus far in this campaign, I don't think he's given any example that he wants to do that. Our thanks to all of our guests. And our thanks to Chris Swick and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida.
So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's Soteria Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.